small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 9, which states, may direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And we have Bob and Mark here sharing with us this evening. Begin with the first paragraph on page 8, and then each of these folks will share for a few minutes on the reading. So, page 80. The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the homes. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand. But what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone to hell through hell for him. So, great starting line.
My name's Bob. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Bob.
My home group is We Are Not Saints group in Virginia Beach. My sobriety date is June 17th, 1998. So, I guess in about a month, God willing, I'll have 18 years, and I'm really, truly grateful that, you know, I have embraced this program and have found a way of living without drinking. Because I'm very fortunate people, because in the end I was ready to off myself, and instead I bounced into these rooms for the last time, hopefully, and found a way and listened to what you all had to say, and my life completely transformed and changed for the better. And the reason I attribute that is working the steps of the program, which has been absolutely critical for me. Thinking about these steps, 8 and 9, one of the things that comes to my mind is this is one of those steps that I would hear on the times that I would bounce in here that was very scary. Because I didn't want to own up to stuff that I'd done, and it kept me sick. Steps 4 and 5, 8 and 9, I just, you know, occasionally when I would tune in to what people were saying at meetings, you know, it would just fill me with fear, because, you know, I just didn't want to face up to it. And I kept trying to find a way that it didn't apply to me. But it took what it took, and as time progressed, you know, I kept bouncing in here. You know, I started to, I don't know if it's the right word to use, but malleable. I became more malleable through pain and suffering and until the end, like I said. But when I read this passage, one of the things that comes to my mind right away is it's hard to sometimes read stuff from that's dated. You know, I'm a guy here thinking about reading this, and it just talks about from the point of view for the man, and it's tough for the ladies, so my heart goes out to the ladies because it's not exactly politically correct, but we do have asterisks nowadays for the editing to kind of denote that, hey, this was a different time frame. But for me, I had my wife is what I consider Lois Wilson, because my choice of women were barflies, you know, ones that like to party and, you know, that kind of ladies. And I had a couple of girlfriends that were like that. And I don't know what God's plan was, but for me, he put my wife in my life because I think he must have really given me a break, because I owe my life to my wife as well, because she's been so supportive. And I'm just amazed that she's still with me after all the things that I did. I would always, you know, tell her I'd be going out for a couple of, you know, maybe an hour or so, and come back a couple of days later. And until the end, I didn't come home for about a week. And I was off to areas around here. I was into drugs pretty bad, crack, and basically looking to score around all these areas or nearby, especially here in Norfolk. It's always a trip to make this trip out here, because a lot of times I reflect on the different areas that I used to go to across Berkeley Bridge, Brambleton, the whole, I think you guys know the areas. So, and I was working at the shipyard at the time, so that's how I became very aware of that. Somebody understands me. But, when I read this passage, that's what comes to my mind, because she definitely was, you know, for me, the girl that went through hell for me. I don't deserve her. All the things that I did, I just don't deserve, you know, the things that I put her through. But for some reason, God gave me another chance with her. When I did come home, my last drunk after 5 days, it was actually like 5 days, and I was up. I didn't sleep. I was on stuff that, you know, kept you up. And I walked in, and I had brown trash bags. She had laid out brown trash bags with my clothes in it. And, you know, those brown trash bags, to me, I just have an aversion even for brown trash bags nowadays in the house, because that's the way I used to live. I used to have clothes, my junk in the car. You know, I see him now, I get the EBGBs, but regardless, she was done, and that's when I realized what I had done, you know, all the guilt that I was doing, going to crack houses, which, you know, if you've ever been to one, they're not exactly a kegger where everybody's happy, joyous, and free, you know, in their mind of, you know, indulging themselves. Instead, it's, to me, it's my version of hell. Everybody's trapped in their own cells, you know, they're watching each other, making sure their stuff's not getting stolen, that kind of stuff, you know, walking in, you know, having a gun put at your head, being frisked, you know. I didn't care, you know, I didn't know anybody. I'd walk in and my life was just in the hands of chaos, and I just didn't care. And so I'm trying to stick to the paragraph, but you know, I wanted to make things right away, and I see that a lot with the guys that I work. You know, they come in, I want to make things right with the wife. I'm like, whoa, slow down, you know, because that's what my sponsor, you know, told me along. You know, I was looking at step 4 and 5 and 8 and 9 when I just got here, you know, and he said, focus on step 1, you know, and you need to go through these steps, because there's come to time and place where all these steps will come together for you. And, you know, a lot of people are motivated. You know, they want, you know, I see a lot of alcoholics who want to fix things right away. You know, we want to get past this. We want to hurry up and fix it. And, you know, that whole immediate self-gratification, I certainly qualify for that, and I certainly behave that way. But that's why it's so imperative for me to get a sponsor to slow me down and, you know, to go through these steps, you know, to build the faith, to finally go to step 4 and start to understand that, you know, these things, you know, are not impossible to do, and I can face up to my lies, my deceptions, and the certain bad things that I did, and alleviate, you know, that fear, not completely, but just have faith that everything's going to be okay. But I did go through the steps. There are discretions that, you know, my sponsor pointed out to me. You know, you'll hear, you know, step one to do so would injure them or others. There were some things that my wife was completely unaware of and some things that she was suspicious of. And the latter was the one that I had to come clean on, and that was, you know, my drug use. I had lied about it, and I hate saying that, you know, I made a fool of her, but I did. She believed me, and I wasn't on drugs, you know. I was just up for a couple of days because, you know, work was stressful, and I used to work at, the third shift at the shipyard, so that was an excuse that I was up all the time. But regardless, I had to come clean on that, and I'll never forget telling her, you know, that I was in drugs, and she really, really was taken apart by that. But she forgave me, and, you know, I moved along this journey of making amends with others. But, you know, again, I stress for me was the sponsor that really helped guide me along that, because had I been control of what I should and shouldn't do, I would not have done just about anything. But, you know, they say that this is spiritual surgery, and it hurts, and that hurt. Getting in touch with my humility, getting in touch with just how much of an SOB I was. But, you know, I was forgiven, and, you know, I cut away that spiritual cancer, and I moved on, and here I am today, and enjoying being with you guys and talking about this. Thanks.
I'm Mark. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mark.
My sobriety date is November 15th, 2008. My home group is the Friday Night Speaker Group of Alcoholics Anonymous at Old Donation Episcopal Church. You know, for me, I led a path of destruction my entire life. I lied, I cheat, and I hurt people my entire life. I was addicted to more. I had to be the best. I had everything, or I didn't want nothing to do with it. You know, I cheated on every woman that I've ever been with. You know, and at the end of my drinking, I had alienated myself from everybody in my life. I was unemployable. You know, I had nothing left in me. I remember waking up, I have a blackout, and I rarely had blackouts, but I did have a blackout where I had taken my son to a movie theater, and I had been up all night on his Adderall, and I drank some wine that morning to bring me down, and I ended up passing out in the movie theater, and I started snoring. And so the usher came in and got my son. They couldn't wake me up, so they called security, and I woke up out of a blackout looking in the mirror thinking, oh my God, what have I done? And my son was the last one in my life that had any respect for me. And I was his hero, but I wasn't, and I knew it. And I came into the rooms, you know, and I was ready. You know, I asked for help, and I accepted all the help that was offered, you know, and I knew that my life depended on it, because I was a very low bottom drunk. You know, I had to move in with my parents, which was, you know, it was tough for me. I had to sell my house because I was behind on child support to two ex-wives. I sold my house. I remember I was going for 90 and 90, and I was like at 85 days, and I went to court, and I had $12,000 in my pocket to pay child support. And I gave the judge $11,900 to be a smartass, and the judge gave me 10 days in jail because I didn't come up with all of it, you know, and I couldn't pull that $100 out of my pocket, or I'd have probably got 30 days. You know, I cheated on both my wives, you know, and repeatedly, you know, when I worked my way through these steps to step 8 and 9. I remember going up to my first wife, knocking on the door. She opened it and slammed the door in my face. And then my second wife, who I did get along with, you know, I had to come clean and tell her that I had I had done a lot of terrible things, and that I had cheated on her, and I thought she knew, but evidently she didn't, and because her eyes got wide, you know, but I wouldn't tell her who I cheated on her with. I just said, you know, I apologize, and you know, I'll do whatever it takes to make it right. And the only thing she wanted me to do was to change my life, you know, and be a good father to my son. And that's about all I got right now.
Thank you. All right, we'll be continuing on page 81, which states, whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we are sure our wife does not know, should we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we have been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She will want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person. We are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found that this is the best course to take.
Bob Alcoholic. I guess I might have gotten ahead of myself.
Me too.
I kind of spoke on my wife. That's the significant other that, you know, I had harmed. But there was other girls, like I said, in my life, girlfriends, and then barflies, that kind of thing. There's a lady, and I'm sure a lot of you know, that likes to use the word broken picker, Lucy, and I love it when she shares, because for a long time that was me. I had a broken picker, and like I said, I think God just got so frustrated with me that he sent my wife in my life, and, you know, I married her, and I didn't treat her very well, but he gave me a chance, another chance, and, you know, in the beginning, or when I was drinking, I would always say, I'll stop drinking, I'll quit drinking, and I did, you know, but, you know, when I got my sponsor this last time, you know, he told me that you never quit, you just paused. And I, you know, he had these magical sayings that were just mysterious in that they would knock me upside the head and say, wow, you know, certain things like that. I guess some people, normal people, would say, okay, that's not very significant, but for me it was. And, you know, when he told me that I paused, I was just like, you're right, I never quit. And my wife, of course, when I embarked on this, I was going to meetings. You know, there was a part of me that just wanted her to, you know, get to that point of trusting me again, you know, to, you know, just be, you know, I could say I'm going out for a little bit and I'll be home, you know. There was none of that, you know. It was, okay, do what you got to do. And as time progressed, you know, I started to live a life that, you know, became what a lot of us call living amends. You know, I started to show up, be responsible, you know, live a normal life that, you know, other people do. You know, they don't disappear for days. They don't go to jail, you know, multiple weekends in a row. They don't, you know, beat up lives, beat up cars, you know, just that whole, you know, way of living. And, you know, for me, you know, I didn't understand any of that. I just couldn't figure out why these things kept happening to me. And I didn't want to look at alcohol, my drinking, my drugging, you know, as the root cause of that. I always thought that I had the chicken and the egg thing that mixed up, you know. I wouldn't look at my alcoholism or drug use. But, you know, progressing through these steps with my sponsor, again, is so important. Because, you know, again, like I said, if I had, you know, done it myself, I wouldn't be here. And I believed in him. I trusted him. I trusted you guys. Especially when you would say, this program works. You know, these steps work. And, you know, going through these steps is what, you know, I believe is what has given me sanity. Because I always equate it to surgery, and I'll keep saying that, but you know, when we start to make amends, you know, we cut away that negative spiritual cancer, and then something else comes in. And for me, it has been something that has just taken my life and catapulted me into that new dimension that the Big Book talks about. Because, you know, I stand here today, you know, a free man, and I've accomplished things with your help and my higher power that was not possible, you know, prior. I would always have some success, pull it down, some success and pull it down, breaking relationships, you know, and now, you know, I suit up, you know, I say what I mean, I do what I say I'm going to do, you know, all these things that just eluded me, and you know, I attribute that to all these steps and listening to you guys and my sponsor. Thanks.
I'm Mark, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mark.
Mark.
I think I answered that question on the last time I spoke. You know, I didn't tell either wife about the women I cheated on with. Because I didn't want them to know, because they knew them. And that would have really caused some problems. You know, the one thing I did do, you know, when I was early in recovery, my sponsor got me to paying attention, you know, to showing goodwill and being positive. And that, and teaching people how to treat me. Because both ex-wives didn't want anything to do with me, even though I was speaking with the second one, you know, they still both disliked me immensely. And I had to teach them how to treat me through my actions, you know, and I had to show positive actions toward them. I had to let them rant and rave at me and let it go through me, because I'm the one that set it up. I'm the one that made my bed, and now I have to lie in it. And I did that for quite some time until they changed their attitude towards me. I could not change their attitude towards me. I couldn't make them do anything. You know, I had to show them through my actions that I was changing, you know, so that they would not only forgive me, you know, but start to open up a relationship with me again. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, next section is on page 82. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is a patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado, roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it great the wind stopped blowing?"
What comes to my mind is when I was growing up, my father is an alcoholic, a pretty bad one. And, you know, I hear a lot of us have this feeling of impending doom. And that certainly, for me, was a result of my environment growing up, and compound that with, you know, my ism tendencies as a kid. It just strikes really home to me, because, you know, my father was a violent drunk, and in fact, he and I made the news in 1984 because he assaulted me to the point where they had to put an APB out on him, and I'll never forget that, because I was in high school, and it was in the local news, and it was very embarrassing. And I can get in touch with that still to this day. But the reason I bring that up is, you know, growing up in that environment is essentially a tornado. And I find myself feeling very lucky, because my boys, I have two boys now, that they don't have to see that. They don't have to live through that, you know, because both of my sides of my family tree are littered with alcoholics and dysfunctionality, and my sponsor said, you get to stop that, you know, generation, you know, by getting sober. And I never looked at, you know, the benefits of getting sober, that, you know, I can stop some of these things, you know, as a result of just living sober and living a spiritual way of life. Some of the things that come to my mind, too, is the complications that arise. Again, you know, what comes to my mind is a lot of us want to get things right. We want to fix things right away. And, you know, that whole instant, all right, I'm going to fix everything. But it takes time. And my sponsor kept drilling that into me. He goes, you got all these problems swirling around in your head. Some of them are false, and some of them may very well be warranted. But he goes, there's nothing you can do except stay sober today. And, you know, you'll start to see that your problems die of neglect. And that statement in itself is another mysterious statement that really hit me hard, you know, because he was right. You know, after time progressed, I got to the point where I started looking around, you know, enjoying myself and not having such a burden, you know, walking or talking or even smiling or looking away from the concrete cracks in the sidewalk. You know, I started to feel what he said was living life with as a loose jacket, something along those lines, where, you know, I'm not always uptight. I'm always not, you know, thinking about this impending doom, this tornado coming down the road. So fast forward, you know, in the first year in my sobriety, you know, I started to live truthfully, honestly, and, you know, within a year's time frame, my wife forgave me, and she started to be so supportive of what I'm doing in the program that, you know, she no longer doubted what I was doing. But it took like a year, you know, over a year, year and a half. And, I've sponsored guys over the years, and, you know, like I said, everybody wants to fix things right away, but it takes time. You know, convincing somebody that you're going to do something different, you know, especially with the way, you know, I conducted myself and a lot of others that I've seen, and it takes time. But one thing is a guarantee. It eventually, you know, puts in the minds of people that you're a responsible person. And, you know, the guys that I work with, the people I meet in these rooms, you know, they can't imagine me being the way I was, you know, but I definitely was that way. And it's working these steps that has gotten me to be that kind of person, you know, the one that can mow his lawn in the morning on a Saturday, and, you know, and I could hear my neighbor doing it and not just think that it's somebody scraping their nails on a chalkboard. You know, I can listen to it and say, hey, that's good living. But before, I was like, oh, I wanted to kill him. Thanks.
Mark alcoholic. My sponsor told me early in recovery that a good indicator of how well I'm doing in the program is how well I'm doing in my family. My dad just passed away 3.5 weeks ago, and you know, he was my hero growing up. He was a brick mason. I ended up a brick mason. You know, he was a stroke victim, and when I went home, he was paralyzed on half his body. And, you know, he welcomed me back home, but my mom did not want me back home. You know, she was, at the time, was very resentful because my dad was a mean and miserable person at the time. He was really angry about his condition, and she felt the blunt of it, you know, and she took care of him, you know, and, you know, I had never told my mom I loved her my entire life. You know, I moved back home, and I was already in the program when I moved back home. And I started, again, as I said earlier, you know, letting her bombard me with her negativity because I had taught her how to treat me to begin with. You know, and again, I had to teach her how to treat me. And I had to be positive. I had to let this stuff go through me. I had to show goodwill. And I came up with this goodwill equals great day mark. I would repeat that in my head as she was being negative toward me, you know. And I would open my eyes wide, you know, and not let my negative, because you can tell everything in my eyes. And you know, and I just killed him with kindness. My dad used to kiss me in goodnight when we were growing up, and I would not let nobody touch me. You know, I couldn't stand it. I turned it around on him. He was in his chair, you know, in his little scooter. And I'll go up there, you know, before I left to go to meetings, before I left the house, I kiss him on his cheek. He didn't want nothing to do with it at first. But, man, after about 6 weeks, he turned that cheek every time I was getting ready to leave. You know? And I mean, hey, and then he got really bad, you know, and I'd have to come home at a certain time the last 3-4 years, you know, and I'd have to put him to bed and I'd tuck him in. I'd say, you want some? You know, and he'd laugh, you know, and I made it. And my mom ended up going back to church because of my positivity, you know. My sponsor told me that I can change people's attitudes through my attitudes. You know, and my mom went back to church, and we made my dad's last 3 years the best years that my mom could remember. And when we buried him, you know, there was no regrets, you know, and that I was there when he died. I was, you know, it was very special. And you know, I would have never been able to do this, living amends, you know, and get close to my parents the way that I did without the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks.
Thank you. Mark. All right. Next passage, page 83. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone.
This is a good passage, especially with the word reconstruction. I love Bill's usage of words throughout the whole big book. The reason I honed in on that word is because there was a lot of words I would come across in life that, you know, instead of researching the word, I would just pretend that I knew what the word meant because I was too lazy or I was just too sick to look up stuff, you know, and I just love his command of the language and the way he writes, because I guess, you know, I had been beaten to hell, you know, in the end, that there were so many things that just made sense, you know, and to me that's an epiphany or the moment of clarity, because for some reason things started to slide right in, and I think it had a lot to do with my prejudices, can I pronounce that? that just kept me from being open to seeing things. And, you know, the whole idea of, you know, being stuck on a channel, you know, that's what insanity is, repeating the same thing over and over, expecting different results. And I love how that phrase is, you know, used in our program. But for me, you know, it wasn't that I worked on stuff. I hear people say that a lot. You know, I got to work on this, I got to work on that. And I, you know, I had a sponsor that says, nope, just keep going to meetings, keep praying, you know, keep doing this. And in a weird way, I started to somehow put together an analogy of the Karate Kid movie, where Miyagi-san, he's telling him to wax on, wax off, you know, all these little things, you know, where, you know, he, in the end, he wants to be taught how to perform martial arts, and instead he's painting fences and washing decks and all this kind of stuff, and the wise, you know, master is telling him to do all these things, and finally gets fed up, and he says, you're not teaching me anything. And then all of a sudden, all these wax on and wash off kind of moves fit in, and that's how I equate to this program, because, you know, I don't work on my anger, I don't work on this or that, I work on maintaining a spiritual life where, you know, it's not a theory, it's a program of action. And, you know, I used to think that the intellect had to precede the body, But we're told in here that you know, the body has to lead the brain, because especially when it comes to living, you know, especially when you're trying to change the way you're thinking, and you know, it's all these things that go counterintuitive to how we perceive things, at least for me, you know, and I had to be told that, you know, and so, you know, I had to develop that faith that, you know, what this guy was telling me was true, because I had no other option. I had to be driven to that, you know, mass of protoplasm that was flat, you know, to listen and to, you know, try something different. And so, you know, through all this mysterious phrases and you guys, you know, repeating those same phrases at different meetings that I would go to, you know, sunk in. And that's how I view, you know, this recovery process. You know, it's one of those things where we don't work on our problems directly. Instead, we help others, you know, just like the big book says, when all else fails, you know, rigorous work with another alcoholic seems to work. And sometimes I do that eagerly, and sometimes I do that like a little spoiled brat. I'm like, ah. But you know what? It always works out. You know, the problem that I was just, you know, bulldozing through with my head, you know, all of a sudden works out. You know, it's like this neurons just get so, you know, tangled up that I can't think right. So I had to be taught that, and I had to be willing to do those things. And you know, that's how I work on a lot of my problems. I turn it over, think, you know, I need help here, God, and then I go off and call somebody or go to a meeting, and that seems to have always worked for me. Thanks.
I'm Mark. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mark.
When I was early in recovery, my sponsor got me to call him every day, and it was very hard for me to call another man and talk to him every day. So I would call him after each meeting and start talking about the meeting, and consequently I start talking about other people. And he quickly told me to mind my own business. And that was our mantra, that I was to learn to mind my own business. It was me that had got me here into the rooms. It got me to paying attention to my thinking, and paying attention to my actions, you know, to make sure that I was positive. And it had to start off with me being positive towards me in the morning. He said, the buck starts here with you, Mark. You know, he goes, if you pay attention to what you're doing, you're not trying to pay attention to what everybody else is doing. And when you're doing that, that your character defects will not die of neglect, kind of like what he was saying. You know, as far as my kids, because again, both wives, you know, we're on speaking terms, and I'm in good terms with one of them. But my direct line is with my kids, and I had to retrain them. I had to tell them, hey, look, the actions when they did something wrong that I found acceptable before, but that wasn't acceptable now, I had to explain to them, hey, look, you know, Daddy wasn't in the right frame of mind when he was allowing you to do this. You know, if you want to emulate me, you need to emulate me now. You know, this is the behavior that you want to copy, is the behavior that I'm displaying now. You know, and you know, the whole thing about it is learning how to live a life where I'm happy, joyous, and free. And that means that I have to pay attention to my action and not yours. And but with my kids, you know, they're a handful, you know, because I trained them well. I really did. And I'm paying the price right now. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, further on page 83. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone.
So after I made my list, step 8, got with my sponsor, and we made an action plan for all of my amends to make, all the things that I've harmed for, you know, the varying people in my life, even going back, you know, prior to, you know, my active alcoholism. One thing that comes to my mind is, you know, people that have passed on. And I don't have direct experience with this, but I've heard people talk about this. And there are some people that have this, you know, this experience, and they're distraught. You know, they may have, how do I say it? They may have gone so extreme with their drinking and using that they harmed their parents, their grandparents. And I heard somebody talk one day at a meeting that what you can do in those instances is to write a letter with no return address and write, you know, basically that amends in there. And I thought that was powerful. And the reason I'm bringing that up is in case anybody out there has that kind of question, you know, how some of these amends can be made. And I find that very powerful. In fact, I suggested that to one of my sponsees, and he did that, and it obviously relieved a lot of guilt he had, and I was so grateful to have been able to pass that on to him. As far as postponement, on my list I had ones that said no. You know, there were people on there that said, don't ever come around me ever again. And I spoke last week, but I'll go ahead and say it again. There was an amends on there where I ruined a wedding. I was trying to be, was it Steve Buscemi and the Wedding Singer, and be that dysfunctional guy that gets into a fight at the reception party and just ruins everything. And I did that, and that was about 30 years ago. And, I carried so much tremendous guilt over that. But, you know, those people said to never, ever contact us again. And it was a good friend of mine. And he's a laid-back kind of guy. And for him to say that, that was pretty potent. So, and the reason I'm bringing that up is because last summer I actually made amends with him, because I ran into him at a hardware store, and he actually grabbed me and looked at me, and I'm like, you know, his name's Jeff, and I wasn't able to make the amends right away, but I made contact with him, and you know, he seemed to not want to kill me. Ironically, he was not married to the same girl anymore, so I kind of have guilt. Maybe I was part of the reason. That's being a good alcoholic that I am. But I made that amends. I did eventually make those amends, and he was just glad that I got my life together. He said he was actually surprised I was still alive. When you live like that, you know, I think he said the last time I heard you were at Eastern State in Williamsburg, and that was not a very prideful moment in my life, but either way, you know, it's amazing how years can go by and you make those amends, and sometimes God throws a curveball in there. It said, and that's why I don't believe in absolutism, the nevers. You know, it's just not a good thing for me to invest too much in. I'd like to throw this in there. I used to hate minivans when I was out there. I hated any kind of symbol of good living, of soccer moms, you know, driving down the road. And the reason I bring that up is because, you know, I said I would never get a minivan, just like that commercial. But after getting my credit restored, my wife wanted to, well, we couldn't have kids, at least we were told at the time. We adopted a child, and then my credit's restored, and then for the first time, you know, I realized we needed to get a minivan. And I get my credit restored, and the very first car that I could buy, brand new car, was a minivan. And karma comes back at me, and I've had that happen many times. And so, the absolutism I try to stay away from, because somehow God always, my higher power has a sense of humor, and he loves to pick on me. Thanks.
I'm Mark, alcoholic.
Hey, Mark.
You know, my sponsor had me make my first amends to myself, and that's been about 6.5 years ago, and I'm still making amends to myself, because I'm still getting those blasts from the past of some of the deeds I did. You know, I remember I was about a year in recovery, and I was speaking at this Bayside Beginners meeting, and I was standing out. It used to be at Bayside Hospital. And I was standing out in front of the hospital smoking a cigarette. And this lady who I had cheated with her on both my wives, and she come walking out past me, and I looked, and I said, Crystal, I was ready to make that amends, you know. And she turned around, her eyes got wide, she turned and ran, you know, and that was the last time I made an amends, you know, without speaking with my sponsor first. You know, I did a lot of terrible things, you know. I led a path of destruction to four states because I was a commercial brick mason, and I ran a lot of big jobs from state to state. And so I had a really checkered past when it came to, you know, hurting people. And I remember I had this one dude that he was my labor foreman, and we were coming back from a company function, and we were both drunk, and I flipped my truck into a cow pasture and broke his neck. And then I ran from North Carolina back to Virginia, and I didn't see him again. And once I came into the program, I tried to find him. And I never could find him, but I wrote that letter, you know, and I wrote that letter about 8 or 9 times for different people that I knew that I could not make an amends to. There were 8 or 9 women, and I burnt that letter. I was with my sponsor. You know, the main thing is I made a living amends to all the people, you know, that are dear to me. My nephews who I trained to be brick masons, and they worked for me for years and left me because of my a-holism. You know, they're now back with me because of the way that I've changed my life, you know, and I've drawn them back into my world. And, you know, these are the amends that are really special for me. Thanks.
Thank you. Oh, sorry. And the final paragraphs at the bottom of page 83. It says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
I love the promises. It's just so powerful paragraph. It's one of my favorites. Comes to my mind is my sponsor talking about the promises, and you know, to me it was still garbled sentences and occasionally a word that popped out and hit me. But you know, he was talking about it to me early on in my sobriety, and he was saying, Bob, so are you amazed at this program so far? And I said, well, a little bit, because you know, I think I had like 30 plus days. I go, well, not really. And then he started talking more and more about it, and I go, yeah. And then I asked the dumb question. I said, well, you know, when will I know I'm halfway through? And he goes, when you're really amazed. It was another mysterious phrase that just hit me. And I know you must think I'm dumb, but yeah, I was. He's a year younger than me, and I'm looking at this guy like he's from some Tibetan monastery or something, and he's just telling me things that are obvious. And so, you know, I love my sponsor. He saved my life. I really shouldn't be here at all. You know, he's such a you know, positive person. And you know what? He won't take any credit, but, you know, I hear the same language from you guys. You know, you guys speak the same stuff, and he always says that we're plagiarists, and I believe that, you know, because I've heard that, but in a good way. You know, it's just one thing passed on from one generation to another, you know, from, what, 80 years of existence. The other thing that comes to my mind is we'll intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us, and I was such in a state of fear that, you know, a lot of times I just couldn't make a decision on stuff, you know, and sometimes I just, and then I would make the wrong decision. And I juxtapose that with my life now because, you know, I bat pretty good average as far as making decisions where I'm not sure of something a lot better when I include my higher power. You know, back, you know, before coming into AA, I couldn't make a very decent decision. I'd make a chaotic decision, and then sometimes I wouldn't make a decision, and then sometimes not making a decision made a problem in my life. And now I intuitively know what to do, and that goes, you know, go to a meeting, call my sponsor, especially say a prayer, and that has worked so much for me. And again, that's something that just makes me, you know, love, reminds me of how much I love these promises. And the last thing I'll say is that I used to go to this meet at the Oceanfront speaker meeting on Sunday morning, and whenever we would read the promises, there was this lady, you know, are these extravagant promises? And she would say, instead of we think not, she would say, hell no. And I say that because these are not extravagant promises. I mean, they come true, and, you know, they're not, you know, I'm going to get a red Ferrari for, you know, it doesn't promise me any of those things. It doesn't promise me any material things. It promises that I'll be able to get through these things, and they may be, you know, mundane to normal people, but to me, it's like a priceless gift for me to not be driven by fear or to worry that I'm going to take a drink again. You know, I wear life as though I have a loose garment on me. You know, I can walk into 7-Eleven and not be disturbed by the detergents in the air, the draw to the cooler for beer or alcohol. You know, I'm a free man. And you can't put a price tag on these promises, at least for me. It's been the best thing that's ever happened to me. Thanks.
Mark, alcoholic.
Hey, Mark.
You know, I was a very low bottom drunk, you know, and I went far down the scale. And, you know, my sponsor told me, Mark, you will attract the sick ones. And you know something, I've attracted some sick ones, that's for sure. But you know something, I've learned how to help people. You know, I've learned how through each of my sponsees, and each time I help other people, I'm learning more and more how to help myself, you know, in this program. You know, and, you know, my dad, as I stated earlier, died about a month ago, and my brothers and sister, everybody was shell-shocked, you know, and I'm the youngest. And it just seemed like it was just natural for me to take charge, you know, and get all the arrangements and do all the things that nobody else was capable of at the time to do. And I couldn't explain it today how I was able to do that. You know, it was God, you know, and I was able to help my mom get through this, and I'm helping her get through it now. And, you know, this program, you know, it's a wonderful life. That's all I got to say. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
All right. Thank you guys very much. We are now going to pass the Seven Traditions basket, and I'll read the Seven Tradition, which states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seven Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Do we have any AA-related announcements?
I'm Mark. I'm an alcoholic.
Yes.
I would like to invite everybody to the Friday night speaker group of Alcoholics Anonymous at Old Donation Episcopal Church on Witch Duck Road at Friday at 6:30. Our speaker speaks 20, 25 minutes on what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, after which we have open discussion where we identify with the speaker. Come join us. It's a great meeting.
Go ahead, David. Looks like you have an announcement. No?
Okay. Jason.
In our group, the Simple Actions Group, we are having our supper and a speaker on Monday, June 13th. We have Buster from out in Suffolk coming out. Starts at 6 o'clock with food and speaker at 7, so please come. And if Simple Actions is a home group, if you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise their hands. Okay. And is there anyone new to AA on their first 30 days of sobriety? We can welcome you.
My name is Greg, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Greg.
Welcome.
Come back.
Come
back.
My name is Tony, and I'm an alcoholic.
Welcome. Welcome. You're coming back.
All right. Well, we do have literature on the table. The big books are for sale, and all the literature and flyers and stuff, feel free to take them. And sponsorship is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone be willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you have any questions about sponsorship or would like some information about sponsorship, just see me after the meeting. And just a reminder, smokers, please use the buck can provided outside, so stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website. I just want to say thank you guys for sharing the room. And after we clean up, all are invited to and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on Colonial and 22nd, I believe. And can someone read the last two paragraphs on page 164 for us? Stephanie?
My name is Stephanie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Stephanie.
Thank you. We'll close with the Lord's Prayer.
I would spill some.
Oh, yeah. I think I have yours.
kept us sober today.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming.